might protect her from needing to kill monsters all on her own. At 11, she already knew that was unrealistic. It wasn't as if her parents didn't love her. It was just that they forgot things a lot, and sometimes those things were important. Which meant, for 2 years, Ben learned to play different instruments, including wine glasses and a tuba, at the fancy school, while Hazel learned a new skill. How to be an unrepentant flirt. Hazel wasn't the best in her class, nor was she the worst. She might have been good at a sport, but she never bothered to try out for one. Instead, after school, she signed up for self-defense classes at the Y and practiced techniques she learned from YouTube videos of sword fighting. But at 12, Hazel discovered something she was weirdly better at than other people. Making boys squirm. She'd look at boys and smile if they caught her looking. She'd twirl her red curls around her finger and bite her lip. She'd prop up her boobs with her arm, the desk, or one of the new underwire bras she persuaded Mom to buy for her, all of them silky and brightly colored. She'd tell people she was doing badly in all her classes, once or twice because it was true, and then chronically when it wasn't. Flirting didn't mean anything to her. There was no plan, no goal. It was just a little rush, just a way to be seen in a place where it would be easy to drown in invisibility. She never meant to hurt anyone. She had no idea that was even possible. She was 12 and bored and really didn't know what she was doing. While she was flirting, Ben was falling in love for the first time with a boy named Kerem Aslan. They met every day after school to whisper together over their homework and sneak kisses when they thought no one else was looking. Sometimes Ben would play snippets of a song he was working on, a thing he'd never done with anyone but Hazel before. She still remembered the way she'd seen Ben trace the boy's name along his arm in water. Aslan, like the lion from Narnia. Kerem looked a little bit like a lion, too, with golden brown eyes and shaggy black hair. Hazel and Ben went from having everything in common to having nearly nothing. They went to different schools, had different friends, different stories, different everything. Hazel was miserable, and Ben had never been happier. But then Kerem's family found out about the relationship, and his parents called to have a horrible, awkward talk with Dad, and Dad hung up on them, and Ben cried at the kitchen table, head buried in his folded arms. No matter how many times Dad hugged him and told him it was going to be okay. "It's not," he whispered, insisting he would never feel any less miserable than he did in that moment. He insisted his heart was broken forever. At lunch the next day, Ben texted Hazel to say that Kerem had been avoiding him and talking shit to their mutual friends. After her classes were over, Hazel decided to walk to his school instead of going straight home. She knew his last period was a long individual study on the flute. After that, they could go get gelato at the place that poured a shot of espresso over it. And maybe Ben would cheer up. No one stopped her from going in. She slipped past the security guard and headed down the hall to the bench next to the music room. Perched there, she was surprised to see Kerem Aslan, of the lion eyes and lion name, walking down the hall toward her.
"Hey, little sister," he said. "You look pretty today."
Hazel smiled. It was automatic, half a reaction to a compliment, and half the familiarity of smiling at him. She'd smiled at him 1,000 times before.
"You know I always liked you. Whenever I came over to the apartment, I'd ask if you wanted to come hang out with us. But Ben said that you were busy. He said you had a boyfriend."
Kerem sounded as if he was flirting, but there was something in his face too close to fear for the words to be convincing.
"That's not true," Hazel said. She'd seen him and Ben, heads bent together as they whispered and laughed, oblivious to the rest of the world. "So you don't have a boyfriend?" Kerem asked.
She could tell from his tone that he was misunderstanding her on purpose, but it still flustered her.
"No, I mean..."
she began, and then with a sideways glance down the hall, he leaned in and kissed her. It was her first kiss, outside of grandmas and elderly aunts, outside of parents and brothers.
despite all the flirting she'd done. His mouth was soft and warm, and while she didn't kiss him back, she didn't exactly squirm away. It wasn't nice, her hesitation. It lasted only a moment, but it ruined everything. "Stop it," she said, shoving him. Some other musical prodigy kids looked over. A teacher came out of her classroom and asked if everything was okay. Hazel's voice must have been louder than she'd thought. But everything wasn't okay, because Ben was staring at them. Then there was only the sight of her brother's backpack, the heels of his black chucks, and the slam of the music room door. "You did that on purpose," Hazel accused. "You wanted him to see." "I told you I liked you," Kerem said, raising his eyebrows, but he didn't sound all that triumphant. Her hands wouldn't stop shaking as she waited for Ben outside his classroom, listening to the strains of music that escaped the soundproofing. She wanted to tell her brother what really happened, explain that she hadn't wanted to be kissed. But she didn't get the chance, because a few minutes later, his music instructor collapsed from a myocardial infarction that nearly killed her. The paramedics came, with Ben and Hazel's parents arriving soon after. Ben wouldn't talk to anyone. Not then, not on the way home. He'd played music when he was upset, when he was probably angry, and his instructor's heart had stopped. Hazel knew he must be blaming himself. Hazel knew he must be blaming the magic, and she knew he must be blaming her. By the time she went up to Ben's room to try to apologize, he was sitting on the floor, door open, cradling his left hand. "Ben?" she said. He looked up with haunted, red-rimmed eyes. "I don't want to play anymore," he told her, voice weak. And she realized what he must have done to get his hand like that. He'd slammed it in the door. More than once, probably. The skin wasn't just red. It was purple. And his fingers were on the wrong angle.
"Mom!"
Hazel screamed.
"Mom!"
"It has to stop," he said. "I've got to stop. Somebody has to stop me."
They took a taxi to the hospital where the ER doctors confirmed that he'd broken bones, lots of them. His instructors confirmed that he wouldn't be able to play anymore, at least not for a long while. He'd have to wait until the bones set and do exercises to give them greater mobility. He'd have to be very careful and diligent. Even though Ben never said a thing to their parents about what he'd done or why he'd done it, even though Hazel never told, they got the message and moved the family back to Fairfold not long after, back to their sprawling mess of a house and their old life. Ben was neither careful nor diligent with his hand. He listened to music, lots of it. He gorged on music, but after they got back, he wouldn't even hum along. He didn't play again, which meant the next time a tourist went missing in Fairfold, Hazel hunted alone. It was different without him, and it was hard going back into the forest after all the time away. The strap for her sword, the one that had allowed her to carry it on her back, no longer fit right. She had to adjust it for her hip, although she wasn't used to having it there, and the slap of the scabbard against her thigh was a constant distraction. She felt silly, almost a teenager, returning to a child's game. Even the woods had become unfamiliar. The paths weren't in the same places, and she kept finding herself putting a foot wrong when she tried to race through them the way she used to. But she was taller and stronger, and determined to handle things on her own, determined to show her brother that she didn't need him, determined to show herself she still could be a knight. She knew the trick to hunting the folk was to keep your wits about you, to remember they were tricksy, to remember that the grass under your feet might move sideways, that you might be led in a circle. Hazel had turned her socks inside out before she set off, and her pockets were full of oatmeal, just as her grandmother had shown her and Ben when they were little kids. She was ready. She had to go back out there. She had to find the monsters. She had to fight the monsters, all of them, until she got to the monster at the heart of the forest and ended the corruption forever, so that everyone could be safe always. Sometimes if she thought too much about that, her heart would race and panic would set in. Her quest was impossible. and she didn't know how much time she had left.
Panic was what she had to guard against, because it was easy to panic whenever she remembered she'd pledged 7 years of her life to the fairies, and after panic came despair. And once despair set in, it was harder and harder to shake it off again. The trick was not to let herself think about it too much. Anything that stopped her from thinking would do. Anything that kept her from pressing her hand against her chest to feel the thudding of her own heart and know that each beat was another moment lost. It took her 3 long days to find the missing girl, a tall and skinny teenager named Natalie. When Hazel did find her, the girl was still alive, but unconscious, hanging from the branches of a thorn tree. A thin drizzle of her blood dripped from one of her arms into a wooden bowl. 2 short ferrymen, with long reddened noses and pale eyes, busied themselves adjusting the ropes, making the girl spin, making the blood drip faster. Hazel had never found a tourist alive before. She knew what the creatures with the girl were, from stories, although she'd never seen one. They were redcaps, terrifying monsters who delighted in butchery and dyed their garments in blood. For a moment, Hazel looked at them and wondered what the hell she was doing. She'd gotten used to living in the city. She'd gotten used to a world without monsters. She'd gotten soft and scared. The pommel of the black-painted sword wobbled in her sweaty hands. "I am a knight. I am a knight. I am a knight," she repeated the words, lips moving soundlessly over them. But she wasn't sure that she entirely knew what they meant anymore. What she did know was that if she didn't get herself together, a girl was going to die. Hazel burst from the brush, slashing downward. The first red cap cried out and then slumped over, entirely silent. Her stomach lurched, but she whirled on the second, ready to counter his attack, ready to slice him in half. She might have won, too. She was strong and fast, holding a glorious golden sword, and she'd taken the 2 redcaps by surprise. But there was a third she hadn't seen, and he knocked her to the ground with a single sharp blow. They cut Natalie's throat. She had such little blood left anyway, they said. And the new one was much fresher. A rope went around Hazel's ankles, and they were preparing to haul her up like the other girl. She felt dizzy and sick, and more scared than she'd ever felt in her life. She wanted to call for Ben, but there was no Ben to call for. She had only herself, and she'd failed. She hadn't saved anyone. She hung upside down from the tree for hours, blood rushing to her head before the red caps departed for more firewood. Steeling herself, she swung over to where Natalie hung. The horror of the dead flesh under her hands was awful. But she climbed the girl's body until she could pull herself up onto a branch and undo the rope at her ankles. Tears wetted her cheeks, although she didn't remember crying. She found her sword, stacked with an assortment of other stolen things, and headed for home, shaking so hard she was afraid she was going to shake apart. That night, she discovered that 13-year-old ferocity was no match for ancient monsters, not alone. She had to admit that her knighthood was lost, along with Ben's music. When she finally made it home, she stood outside Ben's door for a long time, palm pressed against the painted wood, but she didn't knock. Hazel had told him that she was sorry, that she had never meant for Kerem to kiss her, had never wanted it, had told him 1,000 times. But in her heart of hearts, she knew that wasn't entirely true. She'd flirted with Kerem at the apartment because he was a cute guy and Ben had everything. She hadn't wanted the kiss when it happened, but she had thought about it before. And she'd let it happen, when maybe if she hadn't, Ben wouldn't have lost his music. Maybe he wouldn't have given up their quest, either. Maybe Natalie would still be alive. She'd told Ben that the kiss meant nothing, and she wanted it to mean nothing. She wanted to prove it meant nothing. But no matter how many other boys she kissed, she couldn't bring Ben's music back. Chapter 8 The night the prince went missing from his coffin, Mom made spaghetti with jarred sauce for dinner, along with shake cheese from the green can and frozen peas. It was a typical deadline dinner, so familiar that Hazel craved it when she was sick the way other kids craved chicken soup. Dad was already gone and was going to stay in New York through the week for meetings. Mom tried to get them to talk about their day, but Ben and Hazel just stared at their food and answered stiltedly, too distracted by everything that had happened to make much of an effort at conversation. According to their mother, the mayor had already reached out to a local sculptor, a friend of hers, to inquire whether it might be possible to create a fake version of the prince so his absence wouldn't affect tourism. The official story was that vandals had stolen him.
When I was a girl, we all adored him, Mom said. I remember there was this one... Oh, you know her, Leonie's mom. Anyway, she went out to that casket every Saturday with a roll of paper towels and a bottle of Windex to keep the glass shiny. That's how obsessed she was.
Ben rolled his eyes. Mom looked pleased with the reminiscence. And Diana Collins. Diana Rojas now tried to wake him up by reenacting that Whitesnake video, rolling around on his casket like it was the hood of a Trans Am, wearing only a string bikini and baby oil. Ah, the 80s, right? Absently, she rose and crossed the room to pull out an old beat-up sketchbook from the bottommost bookshelf.
You want to see something?
Sure. Hazel said, a little confused. The image of Megan's mother and baby oil was stuck in her head. Mom flipped through the pages, only slightly yellowed by time. There, rendered in number 2 pencil, in Bic pen and colored markers, was the prince, asleep. The drawings were okay, not great, and it took Hazel a moment to realize what she was looking at.
You drew these, she said, her voice coming out slightly accusatory.
Mom laughed.
Oh, I sure did. I used to go out to the woods after school pretending that I was going to sketch trees and whatnot. But I always wound up drawing him. I did a big painting of him, too, in oils. It was one of the pieces that got me into college.
What happened to it? Hazel asked. Mom shrugged. Someone bought it off me for a couple of bucks when I was living in Philly. Hung it up in a coffee house for a while, but I don't know where it is now. Maybe I'll paint another since he's gone. I'd hate to forget him.
Hazel thought of the knife stuck in the wood of the old table and wondered how gone he truly was.
After dinner, Mom opened her laptop in front of the television and watched some cooking show while Hazel and Ben stayed in the kitchen, eating grapefruit marmalade on toast for dessert.
So what now? She asked her brother. We better find the prince before Jack's warnings start coming true.
Then, with a frown, Ben nodded at her hands.
You fall or something?
She looked down at them, no longer red, healed to scabbed lines.
Something happened last night.
The words sat on her tongue, but she couldn't bring herself to speak them out loud. After she'd nearly gotten killed by the Redcaps all those years ago, after he'd seen the bruises and heard the story, he'd begged her never to hunt alone again.
We'll figure something out, he'd promised her,
although they never did. If he knew she'd made a bargain with the fairies, he'd be really upset. He'd feel bad, and it wasn't like there was anything he could do about it now.
I must have got scraped out in the woods, she said.
Sticker bush or something. Oh, well, totally worth it.
Yeah, he said faintly, getting up and putting his plate in the sink.
So, you think he's out there somewhere, bedded down in our old sleeping bag, eating our stale pretzels?
And drinking the drip coffee of our modern age? It's a nice thought.
I hope so, Hazel said. Even if he's the villainous prince from your stories.
Ben snorted.
You remember that? She turned her head, trying to summon up a smile.
Sure, I remember all of it.
He laughed.
God, I haven't thought about our telling each other all that stuff. It's so crazy, the idea that we get him,
that he woke up in our generation.
There's got to be a reason, Hazel said. Something's got to be happening out in the forest. Jack's right about that.
Maybe it's just time. Maybe his curse is up and he smashed the coffin himself.
Ben shook his head, his mouth lifting at one corner.
If our prince was smart and wanted to be safe from the Alder King, he'd come straight to the center of town, go door to door. He'd be invited to more dinners than a preacher on a Sunday.
He'd be invited to more beds than a preacher on a Sunday, Hazel put in to make Ben laugh, because Pastor Kevin was much lusted over by the youth group kids for belonging to some semi-famous Christian rock band. The Horned Boy was a way bigger local celebrity, though. If he showed up in the middle of Main Street, the Fairfold Women's Auxiliary would probably hold a very sexy bake sale in his honor. Ben was right. If the prince didn't mind hiding from the Alder King in the bedrooms of Fairfold, he'd be set. All this rushing into danger isn't like you, Hazel said finally, because she had to say something. Ben nodded, giving her an odd look.
Finding our prince is different.
She pushed herself up from the kitchen table. Well, if you have any brilliant ideas, wake me. I'm heading to bed.
Night,
Ben said cheerfully. Maybe a little too cheerfully. And started for the living room.
I'm going to check the local news, see if they're sticking to the vandal story.
Climbing the stairs, Hazel resolved to try to stay awake as long as she could, hoping to catch whatever had called her from her bed the night before. She'd heard stories of people so enchanted that they slipped out of their houses to dance with fairy folk on full moon nights. Heard stories of people waking up at dawn with raw feet, lying in rings of mushrooms, with a yawning chasm of yearning for things they could no longer recall. If she was going to be used by the folk, she wanted to know about it. Of course, there was the possibility that, having used her for whatever service was needed, she wouldn't be summoned back for a long while. But it was better to be safe than sorry. In her room, she knelt down and slid an old wooden trunk from underneath her bed. The wood was cracked and warped in places. When she was very little, Ben would hide in it and pretend he was Dracula in his coffin, and then the prince in his. When she was even littler than that, Mom had put her toys and baby blankets inside. But now it was the place where her old sword rested along with a bunch of mementos of her childhood. Rocks with shining mica she'd loved and pocketed on walks through the woods. The silver gum wrapper Jack had folded into the shape of a frog. Her old makeshift green velvet cape, which was supposed to be part of a Robin Hood costume. A daisy chain so brittle from drying that she didn't dare touch it, or it would fall to pieces. Those were the things she expected to find when she opened the box. She thought she could take out the black painted sword and stuff it between the mattress and box spring. It wasn't there. The wooden trunk was empty except for a book and a folded up tunic and pants, ones made from a light silvery gray material she'd never seen before. And beside them a note, in the same eerily familiar hand that wrote the message inside the walnut. 241. She took out the book. Folklore of England, the spine read. She flipped to page 241. It was the story of a farmer who bought a stretch of land that came with a big, hairy, troublesome Bogart, who claimed the land for himself. After some argument, they decided to split the land. The Bogart demanded everything that grew above the ground and told the farmer he could have anything below. But the farmer got the better of the Bogart by planting potatoes and carrots. At the harvest, the Bogart got only the useless tops. He was furious. He raged and shouted and stamped his feet, but he'd made the bargain, and like all fairies, he was bound to his word. The next year, the Bogart demanded whatever was below ground. But again, the farmer got the better of him. He planted corn, so that the Bogart was left with only stringy roots. Again, the Bogart raged, more terrible and angrier than before, but again, he was bound to his word. Finally, in the third year, the Bogart demanded that the farmer should plant wheat, but they would each plow the field, keeping what they harvested. Since the farmer knew the Bogart was much stronger, he lighted on the idea of planting iron rods in the ground on the Bogart side of the field, so the Bogart's plow became blunted again and again, while the farmer plowed merrily away. After hours of that, the Bogart gave up, saying that the farmer could have the field and good riddance to it. The words carrots and iron rods had been circled by a muddy finger. Hazel frowned at the book. The story didn't mean anything to her. Confused and frustrated, she busied herself by pulling the muddy linens from the bed and stuffing them into the hamper. Then she grabbed a clean but wrinkled bottom sheet and an old blanket from the hall closet. Finally, she changed into rocket ship print pajamas, flung herself down, picked up a paperback off the side table at random, and opened it, trying to distract herself, trying to convince herself that she needed an old sword about as much as she needed a Robin Hood costume. The book turned out to be one she'd read before, where zombies chased around a brother and sister reporting team. After a few pages in the wash of words, she put it down. She couldn't concentrate. None of it seemed as real as her memory of a mossy stone house with an elf-wrought knife lying on a worn wood table. None of it seemed as real as her sore hands, muddy feet, and missing night. None of it seemed as real as Jack's having a double life. She knew you had to be careful around fairies, no matter how beautiful or clever or charming, but somehow Jack had always been the exception. Now, though, thoughts of his silvery eyes and the odd way he'd spoken wouldn't leave her. Somehow that and the memory of their kiss became tangled, and she felt like a fool. So she rested, eyes shut, pretending to sleep, until she heard the creak of floorboards. Someone coming up the stairs and down the hallway. Ben coming to bed? Or was Ben already asleep and something else was creeping toward her? Hazel sat up and reached for her cell to check the time. 2 in the morning. As she slid out of bed, she heard someone bang back down the stairs. Shoving her feet into her wellies, clutching her phone, she followed as stealthily as she could. If the folk could have drawn her from her bed, it stood to reason that they could draw Ben, too. He might not owe them anything, might not have bargained with them, but that only meant they had no right to him. They took lots of things they had no right to. She found Ben already outside by the time she got her coat and made it out the door. He walked toward his car purposefully. She started to panic, indecision halting her in the shadows underneath an oak tree. There was no way she was going to be able to follow him on foot. She considered racing to the passenger side window and tapping on it. If he was bewitched, that might snap him out of it. But what if he wasn't? What if he was going out to look for the horned boy alone? It wasn't as if he had to take his tag-along little sister everywhere he went. Ben pulled his car out of the driveway slowly, without turning on his lights. Coming abruptly to a decision, Hazel went to the shed and yanked her old bike out from among the cobwebby tools. With shaking hands, she ripped off the reflective discs attached to the spokes, hurling them into the dark. Then she hopped up onto the seat and pushed off, pedaling fast. By the time she made it to the street, his headlights were on and he was making the first turn. She braked gently, trying to stay out of his line of sight without losing the Volkswagen. Speed limits on the back roads were cautious, which made things easier, but there was no way she could keep up if he disobeyed them and gunned the gas. The wind whipped her hair behind her, and the moon was high in the sky, turning everything to silver. She felt like she was pedaling into a dream landscape, a hushed world in which everyone but her and her brother was asleep. The last of her tiredness burned away as her muscles worked, and she got into such an efficient leg-pumping rhythm that, for a moment, she didn't notice he was pulling over. She stopped short, the bottom of her boot scraping against the road. Then she eased the bike off into the trees, where she dropped it among vines and felled branches. A cold sweat had broken out along her back. She had guessed where he was going, to the remains of the glass casket. She followed Ben on foot, creeping along as slowly as she could. She hoped the snap of twigs wouldn't betray her. Whether she was still good at moving silently through a forest or Ben was just distracted, He didn't so much as glance in her direction. It was a lot like hunting, except that it was her brother she was after. The night was damp and chill enough for Hazel's breath to cloud in the air. Creatures rustled in the underbrush and called to one another from the misshapen limbs of trees. An owl peered down at her with its clock face. She wrapped her coat more tightly around herself and wished that she'd bothered to change out of her pajamas before she'd left the house. Ben stopped near the fallen trunk of an oak tree. He seemed to be reconsidering whatever had brought him all the way out here, pacing back and forth, kicking the leaves of a fern bush. Hazel wondered again if she should say something, call out and let him know that he wasn't alone. "I followed you because I thought you'd been enchanted," she imagined herself saying. "But now I realize that you're probably not enchanted, because enchanted people don't suddenly get confused about what they're doing out in the middle of the woods in the dark. Sorry, I guess I probably shouldn't have followed you after all." That would go over well. But then Ben resumed marching through the forest, feet kicking up leaves, and Hazel resumed following him. They walked until he came to the grove where the prince had slept, a grove they'd been to 100 times. Broken glass and crushed beer bottles shimmered in the moonlight. But all the vegetation, from the trees to the shrubs to the thorny vines, was blackened and dead, rotted, as though winter had come early. Even the evergreens had withered away. And the coffin had been shattered. Everyone knew it, but it was different to see, a sacrilege, as though the casket had turned out to be no more magical than a car window someone smashed to get to a radio. Destruction had made it ordinary. Ben walked over to the glass case and ran his hand over the metal edge. Then he pushed the remains of the lid back, tinkling pieces of crystal breaking off and falling. His hand went inside, maybe touching the fabric. Then he paused and looked toward where Hazel was, as though maybe she had stepped wrong and made too loud a sound. What was Ben looking for? What had he come to find? She made a silent vow that if her brother tried to climb into the coffin, she was going to step out of the shadows no matter how mad it made him. He didn't, though. He circled it, as if he was as amazed by the ruin as she was. Then he bent, a frown on his face. When Ben stood, he had something cupped in his hand, something he'd taken from inside the coffin, something that flashed in the moonlight, something he was looking at in astonishment. An earring. A cheap, green enamel hoop that Hazel hadn't even noticed was missing from her ear. Immediately, excuses sprang to mind. Maybe Hazel lost it the night of the party. Though that wouldn't explain the positioning, inside the case, under chunks of glass, and she was pretty sure she remembered putting them back on the next day. Okay, better, maybe another girl had the same earrings and she'd lost one. Hazel had guessed she might have had something to do with the horned boys being loose, but some part of her had resisted believing it. Now, though, she had to believe. No explanation she came up with explained away the evidence. She started trembling, panic rolling over her. Hadn't she scolded herself for running straight into trouble every chance she got? For leaving no stone unturned, no bad idea unembraced, and no boy unkissed, no scab unpicked, no sorrow unnumbered, no hangnail unbitten, and no stupid comment unsaid. Certainly no stupid bargain unmade. Apparently that was still the case, even if she couldn't remember it. After a few minutes, Ben started back toward his car, swearing under his breath. Hazel crouched down and pressed her shoulders against a tree until he passed, until she could get her breathing under control. She still wasn't sure what she was going to tell Ben, but at least she'd have until morning to figure it out. Hazel walked back to her bike. It was where she had left it, obscured by a clump of pachysandra that seemed to swallow the frame. She stood it up, pushed toward the road, and began to pedal, following the distant taillights of Ben's car. He seemed to be heading in the direction of home, so she no longer worried about keeping up. Instead, she concentrated on what she was going to do. It was to the Alder King that she'd sworn her 7 years. Maybe if she went to the hawthorn tree on the full moon and waited, she could make another bargain for answers. Or maybe she'd find the Alder King's Revel and ask him directly what he was intending to do with her. She was pedaling faster, imagining what she might say when she saw the body in the ditch. A girl's body, pale legs splayed in the dirt, brown hair lying in a puddle. Someone was leaning over the body, someone with brown hair hanging in front of his eyes, some of it pushed back over his long, curving horns. She startled, her whole body freezing up. She lost her balance. The bike spun out from underneath her. It happened so fast that she didn't have time to react, to correct herself. One moment she'd been speeding along, and the next she was slamming into the road. The horned boy watched her crash, his expression unreadable in the moonlight. Chapter 9. She hit the pavement, her hands thrown out to protect her face hit first, skidding along the road. Her breath was knocked out of her. She rolled sideways, skinning her elbows and scraping the back of her head. Everything felt raw and awful. For a moment she stayed there, dirt in her mouth, waiting for the pain to ebb. She could hear the wheels of her bike spinning and something else, the horned boy coming toward her. His footfalls on the asphalt sounded as loud as snapped bones. He knelt down, looming over her. His skin was pale, seemingly bleached by the chill. He was still wearing the fine embroidered blue tunic he'd had on for generations, the fabric darkened by rain, ivory boots spattered by mud. His horns rose up over his temples and curved back behind his sharp ears, close to his head and ending in points just past his jawline, so that to someone at a distance they might appear like thick braids. Even his bone structure, the planes of his cheekbones, height of his brow, seemed subtly different from a human's. He seemed overall more finely wrought, like a crystal wine glass revealed to someone used to coffee mugs. His eyes were a mossy green that made her think of deep pools and cool water, and he looked down at her with those otherworldly eyes, as though puzzling something through. He was every bit as monstrously beautiful as he'd ever been. You could drown in beauty like that. "What did you do to her?" Hazel asked, trying to push herself up. Blood was seeping from both of her knees and along her arms, making her pajamas stick to her skin. She didn't think she could run. Her muscles were too stiff and too sore. He reached for her, and she realized that she was going to have to run anyway. She got up, lurched 3 steps, and saw that the girl lying in the ditch was Amanda Watkins. Her skin was white, not pale or even sickly, but white as a sheet of paper is white. The only pinkish parts were along the very tips of her fingers and around the inside of her eyes. Her lips were slightly apart, and the cup of her mouth was filled with dirt, a few vines curling out from the corners. She had a high heel on one foot, but her other foot was bare and mud-covered. "Amanda?" Hazel called, staggering toward her. "Amanda!"
"I know you. I know your voice," the boy said, sounding hoarse, as if he'd been shouting for a week.
He grabbed her arm, and when she whirled on him, stared at her with glittering, hungry eyes.
"You're the very girl I sought."
She felt as if she'd waited her whole life for him to wake up and say those words to her. But now that he had, she was absolutely terrified. She tried to pull away. His fingers held her in place, as chill as if they'd been plunged into ice water, seeming to reach through her skin. She opened her mouth to scream, but all that came out was a strangled sound.
"Quiet," he said, his voice harsh. "Be quiet. I know who you are, Hazel Evans, sister of Benjamin Evans, daughter of Greer O'Neill and Spencer Evans. I recognize your voice. I know all your foolish desires. I know you, and I know what you've done, and I need you."
You what?" She imagined her 9-year-old self whispering to him through the glass, and blushed a hot, shameful red that went all the way down her throat. Could he really have heard all the things they'd said to him, all the ridiculous things that had been said around him for all the time he was there?
Walk.
He pulled her along the road.
We must go. We're out in the open here.
She struggled against his grip, but he pulled her along, squeezing her wrist tightly enough to bruise.
What about Amanda? We can't just leave her, she shouted.
She sleeps, he said. My fault, perhaps, but I cannot alter it, nor is it of much consequence now. Things will be worse for her and for everyone else if you don't tell me where it is.
Where what is?
The sword.
He sounded exasperated.
The one you used to free me. Do not play at ignorance.
Dread turned Hazel's stomach. She thought of the nearly empty trunk underneath her bed.
A sword?
Return, heartsworn. Things will go better for you if you simply do as I ask. If you trifle with me, I will have to show you why that is unwise.
Ask? Hazel snapped automatically. You call what you just said asking? As soon as the words were out of her mouth, she regretted them. She urged herself to think. It was disorienting to stumble along aware that he might be taking her somewhere to kill her, and at the same time confusingly embarrassed that he was going to kill her while she was wearing her pajamas and wellies. If she'd known she was going to die at his hand, she would have dressed up. His lips curled into an almost smile, and he jerked her arm.
Asking in the nicest way I know.
Want my help? She said. Then tell me what you did to Amanda.
As she spoke, she fumbled in the pocket of her coat for her cell phone. He might be a magical creature, a real knight, but he'd still been asleep for 100 years. She bet he didn't know shit about modern technology.
You are much mistaken if you think it was I who did that. There are worse things than me in these woods.
What kinds of things? Hazel asked.
You have perhaps heard of a creature who was once one of the folk and is now something else. A creature of mud and branch, moss and vine. She hunts me. It was she who set upon your Amanda. No blade but heartsworn could even scratch her. So you can see, it would be in your own best interest to give me the sword.
Oh, Hazel thought, a little bit dazedly. No big deal. Just the monster from the heart of the woods, the creature of legend. She tried to keep her fingers steady as she typed to Ben without looking at her phone, grateful for a lifetime of texting during class.
Help! Amanda hurt on Grouse Road! Monster!
You've freed me.
He looked back at her, and for a moment she thought that underneath all his cold fury there was something else.
And you are likely to pay for your kindness in most grievous coin. Why did you do it?
I don't know. I didn't even know for sure I was involved until tonight. You said you heard my voice. Was there anyone else there? Anyone giving me orders?
He shook his head.
Only you. But by the time I came awake, truly awake, the sky was bright and you were gone.
I don't remember that. I don't remember going anywhere last night.
He sighed.
Try to remember. Consider the fate of Amanda Watkins, who, by the way, I know you didn't like. Still, the next victim might be someone you do care about.
She startled at his saying that. He was a stranger, yet the way he spoke and the press of his fingers against her arm were oddly intimate. She'd imagined a scene so very like this so many times that to walk beside him in the dim woods had become half nightmare and half fantasy, all unreal. Hazel felt dizzy, as though she might faint. She kind of wanted to faint, so she didn't have to deal with any of it.
Just because I don't like her doesn't mean I want her to die.
Well then, he said,
as though that settled everything.
Perfect. She's not yet dead.
He didn't even glance in her direction. He just kept walking. They left the road, wading through the brush. Her heart felt as if it were going to thud its way out of her chest. The phone in her pocket buzzed, but she couldn't risk looking at it. She felt better knowing that Ben must have received her message, that someone was going to find Amanda.
"We left you some food and stuff," she said, trying to fill the scary silence of their walk and disguise the sound of her phone, which buzzed again.
Ben must be calling her.
"My brother and I were on your side."
He didn't need to know she had doubts about his story.
A pained expression flashed across the horned boy's face. "I am no hob or hearth spirit, to be obligated by gifts."
"We weren't trying to obligate you," she said.
"We were trying to be nice."
Given the folk's obsession with manners, she wondered if he might feel at least a little bit bad about dragging her through the forest. She hoped he felt awful.
The horned boy bowed his head slightly, a thin smile on his face that she thought might be self-disgust. "You may call me Severin," he said. "Now we are both nice."
Which was as close to an apology as one of the folk was likely to give, given that they prized their own names highly. Maybe he really did feel bad, but Hazel got the sense that it wouldn't matter. Whatever drove him, its hooks bit deeper than courtesy.
Time slipped by as they walked, her stumbling and his walking beside her, catching her arm if she moved too far or too fast. Her body still sore from crashing her bike, her mind buzzing. They plodded on until they returned to the grove. Severin let go of her and went to the remains of the casket.
"Do you know what this was? Not glass," he told her, sliding his hand inside, running his fingers over the lining. "Nor is it crystal, nor is it stone. It's made of tears, almost impossible to shatter. Made by one of the finest craftsmen in all of Faerie, Grimson. Made to hold a monster."
Hazel shook her head numbly.
"You?"
he snorted.
"No one tells the old stories anymore, do they?"
"What are we doing?"
Hazel asked him. He took a deep breath.
"You need to recall who has hearts worn, who gave you the blade and guided your hand, who told you how to break the casket and end the curse."
"I can't."
"You can," he said softly.
He brought up one hand to her cheek. His fingers were cool against her hot skin, brushing back hair from her face.
She shuddered.
"For all our sakes, you must."
She shook her head, thinking of the sword she'd found beside White Lake all those years ago, the one that had disappeared from beneath her bed.
"Even if I had the first idea where the sword was, what makes you think I would tell you?"
"I know what you want of me," he said, coming closer.
Everything else seemed to melt away. He lifted her chin, canting her face toward his.
"I know every one of your secrets. I know all your dreams. Let me persuade you."
And pressing her back against the blackened trunk of a tree, he kissed her. His lips were hot, his mouth sweet, and inside her a warm, numb darkness flooded her thoughts, making her skin shiver. Then Severin moved back from her, leaving her to smooth down the front of her pajama top.
"Benjamin Evans," he called into the darkness. "Come out. Don't worry about interrupting us."
"Get the hell away from her,"
Ben's voice, shaky but determined, came from the other side of the grove. It was the worst thing about being a redhead, Hazel thought. The way blushes splashed up onto her cheeks and down her neck until she practically felt as if her scalp were burning. Ben stepped farther out of the shadows, looking flushed, too. He was carrying an axe their mom used sometimes to chop kindling for the stove in the art studio.
"Hazel, are you okay?"
Her brother had come to save her, like in the old days. She couldn't quite believe it. The elf knight smiled, and there was an odd light in his eyes. He stalked toward Ben languorously, spreading his arms wide in invitation.
"Going to split me open as though you were a woodsman in a fairy tale."
"Going to try,"
Ben said. But there was a quaver in his voice. He was tall and gangly, all loose limbs and freckled skin. He didn't look dangerous. He didn't even look like he could heft the axe without straining. She felt a hot wave of shame that Ben had seen the horned boy kiss her, when for so long he'd been something they'd shared between them. "Ben?" Hazel cautioned. "Ben, I'm okay. If anyone's going to fight, it should be me." Her brother's gaze flickered to her.
"Because you don't need anyone's help, right?"
"No, that's not..."
She took a step toward him before Severin drew his golden knife. "It would be better if neither of you fought me," Severin said. "You've got the range, and your weapon may bite deeply. But I'll wager I'm faster. So, what are you to do? Will you run at me? Will you swing wildly and hope for the best?"
"Just let her come home," Ben said.
His voice shook a little, but he hadn't backed down, not an inch.
"She's scared. It's the middle of the night, and she's not even dressed. What do you think you're doing, grabbing her like that?"
Severin slid a little closer, moving as lightly as a dancer. "Oh, you mean instead of grabbing you?" Ben flinched as though he'd been slapped.
"I don't know what you think you're..."
"Benjamin," Severin said, his voice dropping low. His face was inhumanly beautiful, his eyes as cold as the sky above the clouds, where the atmosphere is too thin to breathe. "I have heard every word you've ever said to me. Every honeyed, silver-tongued word." Ben's mortified blush deepened. Hazel wanted to call to him, to say that Severin had tried the same thing on her, to tell him the same thing had worked on her, but she didn't want to be a distraction. Ben and Severin had begun to circle each other warily.
"I'm not going away without Hazel," Ben said, bringing his chin up. "You can't embarrass me into leaving my own sister."
He was going to get himself killed. He was no longer quick-fingered, no longer carrying a set of pipes hanging around his throat on a dirty string. He couldn't play, and he'd never fought with a blade.
She had to do something. She had to save Ben.
Hazel hefted the biggest stick she could find. The weight was oddly comforting in her hand, and the stance she went into was as automatic and easy as drawing breath. As soon as the fighting started, she was going to rush Severin and hopefully catch him off guard. It might not be honorable, but it had been a long time since she played at knighthood.
"Don't be foolish," Severin told her brother. "I was trained to a sword when I was a child. I watched my mother butchered in front of me. I have cut, and I have killed, and I have bled. You can't possibly win against me."
He glanced at Hazel.
"Your sister, at least, seems to know what she's about. Her stance is good. Yours is abysmal."
So much for catching him by surprise. She was just going to have to hope for dumb luck.
"If you're going to kill me, then do it," Ben told him. "Because if you want to take her, that's what you're going to have to do."
For a frozen moment, Severin brought up his blade. Their gazes caught, snagged silk on a thorn. Hazel held her breath. With a snort, the elf knight sheathed his knife. He shook his head, looking at Ben oddly. Then he made an elaborately formal bow, his hand nearly sweeping the ground.
"Go then, go, Hazel and Benjamin Evans," Severin said. "I release my claim on you, tonight. But our business is not done. Our affairs are far from settled. I will come for you again. And when I do, you will be eager to do as I wish."
With that, he turned from them and walked deeper into the woods. Hazel looked at Ben. He was breathing fast, as though from a physical fight. The axe slipped from his fingers onto the forest floor, and he regarded her with wild, wide eyes.
"What just happened? Seriously, Hazel, that was insane."
She shook her head, equally baffled.
"I think you impressed him with the sheer force of your stupidity. How did you find me?"
A corner of his mouth curled up.
"When you weren't on Grouse Road, I tracked the GPS in your phone. You were close enough to the casket that I thought you might be headed there."
"What is that quote?" Hazel said, walking to him, too glad he'd come to object to the danger he'd put himself in. The Lord protects fools, drunks, and dumbass axe-wielders? He touched her shoulder gently, running his fingers against the fabric of her pajamas and sucking in a breath, as if he was imagining how much all her scrapes had hurt. She realized she was covered in dirt from her fall, dirt and blood.
Are you really okay?
Hazel nodded. I crashed my bike when I saw him and Amanda. I'm okay, but I don't think she is.
I called the sheriff's department, so they must have sent someone over by now. Are you going to tell me what you were doing on Grouse Road?
Ben asked. Following you, she wanted to say, but the words stuck in her throat. If she told him that, he'd ask her about the earring and then ask all the questions that inevitably followed. She got into his car instead, resting her head against the dashboard.
I'm really tired. Can we just go home?
Ben nodded once and walked over, squatting down beside her, inside the open door, visibly swallowing his questions. His blue eyes were black in the moonlight.
Are you sure you're okay?
She nodded.
Thanks to you.
He grinned and pushed himself upright. One hand moved to smooth down her hair.
Our prince really was something, huh?
Hazel nodded, thinking of Severin's mouth against hers.
Severin, she said. Our prince's name is Severin.
Once Ben had told Hazel a tale about a great wizard who took his heart and hid it in the knothole of a tree so that when his enemies stabbed him where his heart was supposed to be, he wouldn't die. Ever since Hazel was small, she'd hid her heart in stories about the horned boy. Whenever someone hurt her, she comforted herself with tales of him being fascinating, a little bit awful, and desperately in love with her. Those stories had kept her heart safe. But now, when she thought about Severin, when she remembered his moss-green eyes and the horrible, shivery thrill of his words, she didn't feel safe at all. She hated him for waking up and being real and stealing her dreams of him away. He wasn't their prince anymore. Chapter 10 On the car ride home from the woods, Ben had a barely contained nervous energy that caused his hand to tap against the steering wheel and to fiddle with the radio. They'd passed Grouse Road and saw the flashing lights of the sheriff's car and an ambulance shining in the dark with reassuring steadiness. Someone had come to fix things, to fix Amanda, who Severin had claimed was still alive.
We have to stop, Hazel asked. What if she's...
Are you really going to tell them what happened?
Ben asked, eyebrows raised, turning the wheel to take a different route home. In her mind's eye, Hazel saw Severin circling her brother, a hungry expression on his face, a shining blade in his hand. And then a shudder went through Hazel when she thought of the awful sprawl of Amanda's pale limbs in the patchy grass. Amanda had not seemed alive.
No, Hazel wasn't sure she knew what to explain to the police, even in a place like Fairfold.
Go ahead and stop, she said. I don't know what I'm going to tell them, but I have to tell them something. My bike's there.
She had no idea if they'd believe her or not, but when Ben showed up with the axe in his hand, she was reminded of all the reasons he had stopped hunting years ago. He'd understood how dangerous it was and how vulnerable they were back then, even if she hadn't. She didn't ever want to put him in that position again. Just because he'd gone looking for the prince didn't mean he wanted to get dragged back into danger. Looking at her like she'd gone crazy, Ben pulled up several feet behind the ambulance. Hazel got out. Paramedics were bent over Amanda's body. An officer looked over at her. He was a young guy. She wondered if he'd grown up in Fairfold. If not, she was about to really freak him out.
"Excuse me, ma'am," he said. "You'd better get back in your car."
"I saw Amanda earlier tonight," said Hazel. "With the horned boy. You've got to look for him."
He walked closer, blocking her view of the stretcher and the paramedics.
"Ma'am, get back in your car."
Hazel got back in Ben's car, slamming the door behind her. Her brother shook his head at her as the officer shone his flashlight inside.
"Please roll down your window. Who's in there with you?"
She cranked down the passenger side window.
"I'm her brother," Ben volunteered. "Benjamin Evans." You were talking to Hazel.
The policeman looked at them, like he didn't quite know what to make of the situation.
You both have identification?
Ben handed over his driver's license. The officer looked at it for a long moment, and then handed it back.
And you say you saw someone?